For September the 8th, 2017, we talk about PlayerUnknown's Battleground sales, XCOM 2, The War of the Chosen, and we ask you how much you indulge in game hype. Welcome to Level 211. My name is Cole Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia.
I'm David Meismith.
I'm Ben Merkel.
And you're listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. Dennis, welcome back.
Thank you. Yeah, long time no see, guys.
Yeah, you were away because you had just moved into a new house.
Yeah, and that has been one hell of an adventure. But things are finally kind of starting to settle down from the overt, like running as fast as you can crazy. And now it's just the, I don't know where anything actually goes crazy.
Yeah. This is the first time you've had to move a family, right?
Yeah. I mean, outside of moving to college apartments or into the first house before, you know, any kids.
Right.
This is the first big one. And, yeah. And hopefully they'll last for a good long time. Part of the reason we picked the neighborhood is like, this is one you can see yourself in for basically as long as you have kids in the house.
Yeah, it's one to grow on.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, so
how much stuff have you accumulated in the last like 4 to 5 years?
Too much. It's one of those things where like it's impossible to define the exact amount of too much. I just know vaguely that it is too much.
Just like Shawshank Redemption. You just bring in little pebbles at a time and you don't realize how much you move.
Well, no, the big thing is getting the boxes out of our garage, because we've been using the garage as the staging area for all the boxes. And so, like, you know, full boxes come in, empty boxes go out, and then we've only had one trash night here. And you would be amazed how many cardboard boxes you can stuff into a recycling bin in 1 week. But you know, that was a part of it. We've continued filling up that side of the garage, the empty side of the garage. We had someone swing by tonight who wanted some free empty boxes for whatever purpose and emptied out some of that.
I assume sexual.
Yes. You know, they didn't specify, so it has to be.
They wanted, right? they wanted to build a sex maze.
I'm not sure that's the thing.
Very easy to just escape if you get frustrated. But yeah, so diminishing numbers of empty boxes in our house has been the best measure of our progress. And if you use that, we're probably about halfway. Something like that.
Yeah, that problem of getting moved in is always like it's like a long tail problem. You get down to that last 20%, and that you're going to be moving that around. It's like sand in your car. It never really goes away.
See, I just realized that like the only thing I actually use in my house is the microwave, my bed, and my computer. So I kind of just only moved those in.
Good man.
You're ready for a like a snow crash, like coffin hotel situation.
Exactly.
See, I'm seeing the virtue of that in this craziness, and I would like to lobby for not a tiny house, but an empty house.
Mm.
So
I mean, some of that stuff actually is true in terms of my interior decorating approach, but I've also been like trying to do the minimalism thing, and honestly, one of the most difficult things is figuring out how not to, you know, inadvertently be an asshole to people who want to give you things. Anywhere from like discreetly like refusing / getting rid of gifts to like, no, I will not take like, you know, random whatever swag.
Do you find yourself in situations where people are like sneaking stuff into your house?
You know, it's
why is there a long pause on that?
No, because it's funny because like obviously not literally, but once you start like trying to get some of this stuff under control, you don't quite realize some of the things like that. You know, just like, you know, obviously I recently started a new job. And as part of that, like, I got a whole bunch of, you know, swag from work. And now I have to figure out what the hell I'm going to do with
it. Throw it away.
Part of the problem is I super don't like throwing things away, so I just try not to let them in my house. This may just be my psychosis.
Just throw it away with abandon. Like, it's nice to donate stuff, but there's too much friction with that. Like, if it's valuable, if it'll really help somebody, go ahead, Yahtzee. But if it's just a shitty Microsoft shirt, nope. In the garbage you go.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm by no means a role model for this. I have, you know, a pretty cluttered home in terms of number of possessions and stuff, but I try to keep a thumb on stuff by just constantly rearranging.
Yeah, there you go. If you have to move it every couple of days, you will be really, really discerning about what you allow in.
Right, right. Or, you know, like on a less psychotic level, like, oh, I'm going to rearrange my living room every 3 months.
You know, so that the carpet ghost pattern.
So this door goes nowhere because I demolished my deck.
the big problem is that with kids, especially, we need backups of everything. So it's like, yeah, I've got too much stuff, but if I throw it away, I know they'll break the one I have.
Yeah.
Tomorrow. See, there's actually, as much as I love minimalism, there's actually a really good article on it. It's actually like the Art of Manliness website that basically what they argue is the problem with minimalism is you can only do it if you're rich.
Yep.
And, you know, for that very reason, basically arguing like, you know, drive down to Appalachia and see people with like 3 junked out cars in the front yard. Well, that's because like if their car breaks down, they have to get a part.
Yeah, like, you know, or 5 shitty versions of a thing is cheaper than the one that can be your only, you know?
Right, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, it's complicated. Well,
how come our banter always gets like somewhat dark right before we end it?
I think that we're
like melancholy.
I think that we're in a mood. I think that there is definitely, I'm in a mood. I've got some stuff happening, but yeah, I think it's just a mood. It'll pass. We'll be fine. It's funny that you noticed I was ending it. But yeah, welcome back, Dennis. We're super happy to have you. And why don't we celebrate the occasion by doing our regular kind of show, the brief, the multiplayer and the grind, starting with
The Brief,
where we talk about things that are happening in the world of video games around us, as opposed to the actual world, which is shitty and sucks. Yes. Let's see here. Dennis, you have a story about PUBG or Plunk Bat, whatever your term of art is for it. I forget.
Yeah, anything Plunk other G. than PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds, because that's too hard to say.
Yeah.
Too many syllables.
I mean, I messed it up saying it right there, so you can tell. Clearly it needs abbreviation.
It's a vowel soup. Yeah.
they've broken 10 million copies sold, which, for reference, I counted up on the graph that they posted, is about 16 times faster than Minecraft.
Yeah.
In terms of copies sold. So just literally an order of magnitude and then some faster than Minecraft that they've reached that milestone. They've also, if you've been paying attention, just crossed every kind of record in terms of concurrent players and number of people watching a stream, and just like it's an incredibly meteoric rise. Like it's just a vertical line, essentially, the number of people playing. And I think that the news that they had reached 8 million players about a month ago at Gamescom kind of pushed them over the edge. Everyone was like, oh shit, then I really need to get on this. Anyone who was kind of holding out, you even saw that conversation happening on our Slack channel.
Yeah.
And that's kind of given them the bump, the 2 million in a month that they need to get to that point. So yeah, this is really, you know, good to see, because it's a game that I enjoy. I think it also begs the question of, like, now that so many people are playing, there's the competitive scene is kind of more established. Like, it feels like it's hit this size, but people have kind of figured it out.
Yeah, that's a problem. I've got it, and you know, like always, I waited too long to get into it. I wonder if the additional maps are going to break that.
Yes, I was going to bring those up. That's a great question, and I really, really hope that's the case.
There are additional maps, or they're also adding like climbing and stuff like that into it, which is going to change like the topography of the world a little bit.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
I really want a forest map.
Yeah, a forest map would be interesting. I think from what they've announced, it does look like they're making an effort to make the maps varied and not just like the island 2.0.
Mm-hmm. What will happen is they're going to put out the new maps, but people are going to reject those. And, you know, it'll be like a Counter-Strike situation where it's nothing but DE dust all the time.
Yes. Yeah, there is a final destination.
Yeah.
Mode. But yeah, so that'll hopefully help. They seem to be in this unique position where they can kind of just, you know, everyone's pretty happy with the game as is, right? Like technically there's still an alpha or early access or whatever. But no one's screaming at them to put out a final version.
To be fair, it's a survival game, so I don't think they're allowed to take it out of alpha.
Yeah. but I like that, you know, that first person was, first person only servers was something that people wanted. So they did that. The new maps are on the radar, but not out yet. They've added a replay system, which was, they're kind of letting people pull features versus pushing features out to them.
Yeah.
Which is probably wise given that they're kind of okay where they are.
Right.
Hopefully this doesn't turn into too much ambition and them, kind of turning this into a game that has to have everything. I kind of like the amount of focus that's in it right now. Mm-hmm. In that, you know, there's a simple set of mechanics, a relatively simple set of things to interact with go. Yeah. Versus them deciding that they need 6,000 modes and all this stuff. Like I would rather see them focus on new maps and that sort of thing. But we'll see.
So I feel weird being like a shitty business pundit kind of guy, but I'm looking at a chart here of World of Warcraft subscriptions, which I think is going to be a useful illustration of kind of how fast this is. I can't recall exactly when PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds came out. It was earlier this year, right?
Mm-hmm.
So let's say it's been out for less than 8 months. Looking at this, it took World of Warcraft 3 years, roughly 3 years and probably like 3 months, to break 10 million subscribers.
Yeah.
And it peaked at around just shy of 12.5 million, about, let's say 3 years again after that. And it's kind of been on the decline since then. What sucks about this for their situation is, you know, 10 million times, you know, times $30, which is what that costs. So, you know, 300 million minus Valve's third. So $200 million. Okay, cool. That's a shitload of money that they would have gotten, lose some of that to taxes, etc. Say this is the peak and say that the fad passes, like they're going to have a lot of money right now, but they've got no way to actually like keep paying themselves to support that. So like what they make on every sale right now, like that has to factor in all future development.
Right. Unless they do some sort of DLC or...
Well, then half their player base is going to abandon them. Or it will look like half their player base has done that because people will shout so loudly.
No, dude, just put skins on the pots and then everyone will buy it up.
Yeah, that's the actual solution. Like, Ben, you nailed it.
Pot armor?
Yeah, just pot tags.
Yeah. Pot skins.
I want you're joking about pots. I want the pan in Plunkbat, but just skinned as a butt. So that when I'm carrying it around on my back as the protective melee weapon of choice, it'll look like a running bear ass around.
I think if I could get with a skin for the pot, I would want to go with like a 420 skin just for sake of, you know, puns.
Oh, for the redundancy between the concepts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would want a plant sticker on it.
a potted plant or a planted pot?
Are we done with the pod jokes?
Yeah, I think so.
Hit bedrock.
Yep. Oh, man. Well, congratulations to those guys. They seem to have captured a moment. 10 million is a shitload of people.
Is 60 Minutes still a thing? How long is it before we hear about how, you know, the big fad with gamers is, you know, kids, you know, playing deathmatch, you know, murder simulators?
They call it plunk batting. And your children might be doing it right now.
Yeah, I almost wonder, though, it's, you know, given the whole technology acceleration thing, if you know, if there's some kind of inflation for like crowd adoption that we need to be applying to this to get a real sense of it.
Oh, I think so you're saying my 13-year-old metric isn't good enough for you?
Yeah. You know, a player today is not worth what they were 20 years ago.
Although it'd be interesting to look. I wonder how international this is, because, like, I know, you know, World of Warcraft was, you know, I think launched in pretty much all of the Western world at once, right?
I know
China was later on, but
yeah, I couldn't tell you. I don't know.
Whereas, like, I don't know if I have no idea if, like, this is a thing outside of like our largely American like following.
I don't know enough to say. I imagine if it's hitting the top concurrent players on Steam, I would have to imagine there's a fair amount of you know, widespreadness to the phenomenon.
That's true.
Yeah,
that's
the viewing audience in China for the Gamescom tournament was actually like 5 million or something like that. Wow.
Good for them. let's see. I've got one. We are going to be doing Resident Evil 7 for Watch Out for Fireballs here in November as part of Resident Evil Month.
Which, you guys are going to be more current than this podcast pretty soon.
Pretty soon. I know I'm the only person who's covered, who's played it on this show. Wait, did you play RE7, Ben, or did you just play the demo?
I saw it played at Gen Con in the VR one, but that's
okay. But you haven't sat down.
I played the demo.
Yeah. That's a good game. And the DLC that's been released so far, at least the one that I played, is pretty good. Unfortunately, the last piece of DLC, the next big one, is going to be coming out after we cover RE7 for the show, so womp. It's taken them a while, but Capcom is releasing two of the planned / delayed DLC packs, one called Not a Hero and the other called End of Zoe, this December, alongside a gold edition of the game, so their Game of the Year edition, less than a year after the game first came out. The End of Zoe one is gonna give a conclusion to one of the characters' stories, and the Not a Hero one is going to involve Chris Redfield, who, no spoilers, ends up being involved in the main story in a way, because, well, it was a surprise. It was a surprise then, but the game is 9 months old now, so
yeah.
But yeah, I'm excited. I think I have a season pass for this. I have no idea, but I'm pretty excited.
Just make sure a season. Well, I'm going to sound more bitter about it than I am. I was about to say, just make sure a season pass is actually a season pass that contains everything. Because I bought the digital deluxe version of XCOM 2, and then found out that it did not include the War of the Chosen DLC.
Oh.
But I'll be talking about that in a little bit. I went back and checked, and it never says like all DLC. It lists off a very specific set
of
DLC,
right,
which just happened to be everything out at the time.
Right.
And War of the Chosen is freaking amazing, but we'll get to that.
Of course. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So it's like December 12th or something like that. I'm gonna be pretty excited. It's a bit of a bummer because Chris's thing takes place after the events of the game. I want to know what happened before this. But
maybe that'll be the next DLC.
Maybe. Or maybe that'll be Resident Evil 8.
Mm-hmm.
Who knows? I don't. Man, I'm excited to play that game again. It is a very good video game. Oh, gosh. Let's see here. Ben, what's the story you got here about a Walking Dead thing?
Yeah, there's a Walking Dead thing. They're making an AR game, and so there's like buzz around it that it might be like the next Pokemon Go type game, but it's a company from Sweden is releasing it. Let me see if I can look up the exact name. Sorry, you can cut this out maybe.
Don't tell me what to do.
All right, or not. Either way. it's coming from a game company called Next Games from Finland.
Okay.
Not Swedish.
They get very upset if you mix them up.
I mean, yeah, I could understand that.
Yeah. I have no idea.
So it's a Walking Dead themed game. The buzz around it is that it's using a new type of AR tech, and it's specifically an Apple like dev kit that they're using called AR Kit.
Yeah, it's part of iOS 11. It's okay. Yeah.
And so the sell of this is that it's like actual AR, which I was always kind of railed against Pokemon Go. It's not actually AR. It's just like a thing with the overlay. Right. I don't know, but it doesn't actually interact with the environment. They're claiming that this, or at least the technology that it's using, has the ability that it can like dynamically hide things behind objects in the environment and then quote unquote reveal them. I'm not sure how well it does it, but that's kind of like the claim that what they can do. They also say you can play it pretty much anywhere where you are. So you can play it like walking on the street, or you can play it, you know, if you're just in your living room. The idea is that you can walk around in the environment and pick up, like, find weapons pick up, and then there's, like, zombies hidden somewhere in the environment.
Yeah.
So similar to Pokemon Go, except you kill the Pokemon. And they have, like, digital, like, buddies that you can have, like, as characters from the show that you can play with. But I'm not sure. Again, I don't know how that works exactly. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm curious about this. It would be neat if there was something, if there was some game based on either the TV show or the comics, like directly on the comics, that was good, as opposed to the side stories, right? Although I guess I haven't played the Michonne ones from Telltale, like that weird little mini series that they did. But yeah, mm-hmm. most of the walking, like the only good Walking Dead stuff is Telltale, and that only like just barely intersects with the with the show at all.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. This is judging just by the teaser trailer and then the screenshot that they have posted. It seems very, very much in the conceptual phase right now. Like, I sincerely doubt that the screenshot is from the actual game, and the teaser trailer is very, very much dramatized. So,
could easily see that being a thing, especially since the demo that they played was the quote unquote hands off demo.
Of course.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
We call it like the No Man's Sky effect.
If it's dynamically like hiding in-game objects behind real-world objects, I'm looking forward to all the funny impossibilities that happen, where like, you know, there'll be a tiny light pole with half a zombie peeking out of one side and then just not peeking out of the other, where clearly they would have to be.
He's hiding behind your ceiling fan.
Yeah.
And moving very quickly.
Oh,
that's
impossible
funny.
To hit.
Huh, man, looking at this, that screenshot of weird actually came up, but that Michonne model that they have on there, that is really creepy looking, actually.
What is Michonne?
Michonne is a character from the show. She's she's the woman who carries around the samurai sword.
Do they ever explain out
where she gets that?
At some point, I think they do. Maybe I forget.
From a samurai.
Yeah, she killed a samurai.
Is there a zombie samurai show yet? I feel like that mix up of words has to have occurred at some point.
I don't know.
I mean, I'm sure there is an anime.
Yeah. And David, round us out. You've got two stories posted here. Which one do you want to do?
How incredibly nerdy do you want this to be?
I mean, I'll leave it up to you.
Let's go with the more nerdy one. Although this is going to be a programming one again. Although I think it kind of justifies itself from a historical standpoint. Basically, there was going around the Tweetosphere a excerpt from the source code for Zork, which basically shows that one of the mechanics in the game is that there's a limit on the number of items you can have in your inventory at any one time.
It's like an encumbrance.
Well, sort of.
That's what it's conveying, right? Just like, hey, you need to drop something, you're carrying too much.
Sort of.
Okay.
So we will get to that, actually. So what it actually turns out is there, what's weird about it is that there's actually, it rolls a random number, whenever you attempt to pick something up. And so your maximum inventory is actually random every time you try to pick something up. So you can literally have situations where you attempt to pick up a item, fail, attempt again, and succeed.
Well, you just slipped your butterfingers.
Exactly. And so what it turns out is basically the first 8 items you pick up will always succeed. And then after that, every additional item you pick up has a greater chance of failing. And so that's just kind of weird and interesting. But what's kind of makes the article is they go, go through analysis of kind of why this was the way it is, you know, kind of what its place is in the history of video games. And, there's kind of 2 points that are really interesting. One thing is that there's, in addition to this, also a encumbrance system. So every item also has a weight, and can only carry 100 pounds.
Okay.
And then, what's also interesting is they basically argue that, this was one of the first video games. And so, kind of the concept of fair play and, things like that, really been established.
Does this decision contribute to something we're trying to say, or is it something the player will find fun or engaging? Like nobody thought to stop and ask that.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Because I mean, if you think of like, something like NetHack, where it's just assumed that you have to try random potions, and sometimes they might just outright kill you.
Yeah.
And, sorry, try again.
And, NetHack came, way later. Like, they were making a very conscious decision to, make something you would have to meet more than halfway.
True, true. But, that's, kind of the one side of it. The other thing that's interesting is that apparently a lot of the Zork games, well, all 3 of the Zork games use the same kind of core system.
Same parser.
Say that again.
It's the same parser.
Right. And so there was some speculation that this might actually be a glitch where apparently in the second game, the evil wizard can cast a fumble curse on you, which causes you to randomly drop things.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's some speculation that that might be what was causing this. But I guess looking at the source code, you can kind of see that that's not the case. The other thing that at least to me was really interesting is you kind of spoke about the question of, does this gameplay decision, actually add to the game, that sort of thing. And one of the quirks of Zork is that you have a lantern that will burn out after a certain number of
it's somewhere around like a number of days in a year or something like that.
Well, no, it's 385 turns.
Oh, okay.
And at which point you will be eaten by a goo. So actually failing to pick up an item on the first try actually has real gameplay impact.
Yeah, it'll burn a turn that may be like the last turn that you can need to use, that is the difference between winning or being eaten.
Right, exactly. So it's just sort of Oh, interesting. Also kind of interesting is apparently the company that Infocom, the company that made all these games, released them basically built upon a virtual machine, which allowed them to release on like all of the random computers that were in existence at the time, all at the same time.
Right.
So, because of that, there's been, to even like be able to kind of do this analysis has been a whole, hobbyist effort to kind of reverse engineer these machines and open source them and stuff like that. So.
Yeah. I'm surprised there wasn't. So even if you're running like a DOSBox copy from GOG, you would still be running that package that is the virtual machine that is looking one layer deeper, so you couldn't even reverse engineer from that.
Yeah, so yeah, I don't know. It's this may be something that is entirely only interesting of interest to me. Oh, I'm sorry. One other interesting tidbit is that items that are inside bags still contribute to your weight, although they don't contribute to number of items carried. And
So you need to spend more turns putting stuff into bags?
Right, exactly. And all clothing that you wear only weighs 1 pound. Unfortunately, there's no clothing.
What?
So,
Well,
yeah.
maybe they're building it to be forward compatible to a different game with that system in it.
Yeah, because actually, apparently, Zork 2 does in fact have clothing. So,
Right.
but it's just like, it's kind of, an interesting world into the world before we had rules.
Yeah, that just sucks. The idea that, oh, we're just gonna pin this incredibly important thing to oh man, just to a random number generator.
See,
Which
I'd
there are plenty of
actually
games that
argue,
do that, but
and I think the thrust of the article is it's actually kind of a elegant solution
I
in
mean,
that
to what?
well, in that it provides all of the effects of a extremely limited inventory system, but provides the player with some slack.
But there's nothing you can do about it. It may cause you to drop an item that you might need later on,
Well, it doesn't
thinking
cause you
that
to
that's the
drop
problem.
anything. You just might have to try a couple times to pick it up.
Right. But it doesn't communicate that, like, oh, you dropped it, try again. It's just like, oh, you're holding too many things already. Like, okay, well, should I drop everything? Like, or should I drop, should I drop something else so I can pick up this thing that I
See,
might need?
only if
that would be
you
the
first
most
put
accurate
down a
thing to do.
mattress to keep it from breaking when you drop it.
Right, this isn't Rogue. It's not Dwarf Fortress.
Every game
No,
developer
what should
knows
happen
that.
is every time you try to pick something up, there's a slightly higher chance that you drop everything, because that's how it works in real life for me. It's like I can pick up one thing, two thing, three thing, four things, and then once I'm up to like six or seven, every time I pick something new up, there's a chance that everything else comes spilling out of my hands.
Yeah.
But you should still be holding that one latest thing that you picked up.
Also, if you have a cat familiar, there's a chance that at any time it will decide to like jump at you and make you drop everything.
Yeah.
Yes.
And if you drop a football, it takes 7 turns to recover. Because if you try chasing one of those things.
Can you add a spring sound effect there?
Multiplayer.
Now it is time for the multiplayer, where we ask you a question and then you answer it. Dennis, what is the question that you asked the nice people?
Yeah, the question is about upcoming games that you're excited about and how you kind of handle pre-release coverage. Do you pay all attention to all announcements? Do you go to media blackout and not want to know anything, or somewhere in between?
Yeah, and a lot of people came out for this one, so I'm going to get us started with Chase, who says, "It's taken a long time, but I've finally fallen into sticking my head under the sand, every time that I hear about something interesting. Outside of E3, I typically avoid teasers and previews about games that I know I will want to spend some time with. The exception to the rule is if I think it will be a day one purchase, I may try to find more information just to make sure that I don't get burned." reasonable. Reasonable, but yeah, I was about to say, how do you know something's going to be a day one purchase? But you know, we all have those things that we know are going to be day ones.
Yeah, but at that point, like, is there anything that would stop you from buying it?
I don't know.
I didn't buy Agents of Mayhem or whatever, and that's was pretty close to a day one purchase.
Agents of Mayhem. Hmm.
Yeah, get the.
I've no idea what it is. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't recognize it either.
Yeah,
That's the totally not a new Saints Row game.
Oh shit! Yeah, that I heard was that ended up not being good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Got it.
IGN gave it 7.1 out of 10, which when you don't even score an 8, I mean.
On that site, yeah. Let's see here. David, what does Nick say?
Nick says, I usually take the same approach with video games as I do with movies. Watch the announcement trailers, read up on some of the initial reports, then complete media blackout. Once I have the basic idea of what it is and whether or not it sounds interesting to me, I have enough information to make a decision on it. I kind of like that. You sort of fake them out, like you make it like look like you're going to, you know, read all about it, and then you stop.
Yep. Tease them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Ben, what does Justin say?
Justin says, I put myself in a blackout, so dark that I no longer want to play the game when it's finally released. Definitely true if I already purchased it on Steam Early Access.
Oh, jeez. Yeah. Yeah, especially if you do it on Early Access. Yeah, I just love that idea. The second there's a single sign, you threw it on a smoke bomb and you disappear. Like, you start your new life four states over with a new name and a new face.
I'm a little confused how you get the new face, but...
Oh, Nicolas Cage technology. Dennis.
Face off!
Dennis, what does Jonathan say?
He says, well, as we speak, I'm currently highly anticipating the release of Destiny 2 tomorrow or within the next 12 hours now, but I have to work tomorrow, so I can't play probably until Thursday, and my lack of good internet also contributes. I've been doing my best to go radio dark as far as spoilers, and everyone is playing the game now, so no internet and very little Facebook, and definitely no Twitch. Great question. Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
So I think this one kind of gets into my answer indirectly, by which I mean I forget all about the game until someone mentions it on a multiplayer, and then I realize that Destiny 2 comes out tomorrow.
Hey, I did that with Hellblade.
Yeah. Just don't download it while we're talking. It affects the audio quality. I know you didn't do that, Dennis.
Yes.
That's just a blanket for everybody.
I think I
didn't. Ooh, I mean, you told me you didn't. That'd be shitty of you. Whatever, yeah, I can't control
it. He didn't tell you he got Google Fiber either.
You told me you didn't, and I could understand you while you said it, so that tells me that you didn't.
Yes. Oh, man. Yeah, that's tough, especially with something like Destiny, because that is a community thing. I mean, pretty, you know, okay, so you have to work that week. By the time you log on the weekend, you know, you've missed your moment. Everybody's level 20, and all of a sudden your daughter's knocked up, you know, and there's change missing off the dresser.
There's, like, some weird mechanics in that game.
Yeah.
I didn't even have a daughter when I started this game.
So, yeah, that's tough, especially if you're missing out on buddy time. Oh, well. I'm looking forward to hearing people speak in broad strokes about Destiny. I'm not looking forward to a return to people speaking Destinies. You know?
Yeah, like, what's the there was the roving shop, and it was like a guy who only showed up once a week.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's on Thursday.
Like, yeah, there you go.
Yeah, I just can't.
yep. There it is. Destinies.
I cannot handle Bungie's way of naming things. I just can't.
I feel like, though, don't you like fantasy stuff? Like, I feel like this is no worse than, like, anything in Forgotten Realms.
Hypocrisy is a fake concept.
Ah, fair enough.
John writes, usually I'll read updates if I come across them, unless they look too spoilery. I don't tend to seek them out. On the flip side, if it's a game that has been released in another territory and I am waiting for the US one, I go full blackout until I get the game. God, it's just fucking everything with Dark Souls. I think from like Bloodborne up through Dark Souls 3, the number of people who got access to the Xbox One Japanese territory version of it that just beat it a month before it came out in the US. Like, that was a real, just a douse of water. I didn't care for that one bit. Ugh. David, what does Jonathan say? Wow, we have three Johns. Wait, we have three Johns and a Juan all in a row. What the fuck? Did you guys like coordinate to try and make things as confusing as possible? Hey, David, what does the third of these Johns say?
I like how they spell their names differently too. Yeah.
This is incredible.
Multi-John.
As soon as I hear something that sounds interesting, I spend a lot of time tempering expectations. I think about every time ads have lied to me and game publishers have screwed up. I have a bunch of reviewers I listen to on release, and that helps me gauge what it's worth.
You make this sound like you're some kind of ascetic. Like, just like, okay, I hear about something new, and I immediately start self-flagellating.
Yeah. Wait, you don't?
I mean, not right then. You work it into your day, part of your schedule. Routine, baby. You got to make just that a
flag here and a flag there.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Ben, what does Juan say?
Juan says, I tend to differ depending upon the title. Highly anticipated Destiny 2, but stayed away from pretty much everything aside from beta/trailers. But with the day off being taken from me tomorrow, I've spent all day today at work listening to people on YouTube and best suggestions for maximum efficiency. Want to use what little time I have wisely, seeing as I have to wait until Friday for that day off. Whereas games with stories I care about, I'll stay away from everything, even trailers. Don't want all the best bits ruined, like with movie trailers.
I feel really bad for Destiny that we're categorizing it under games without stories. Like, I'm not saying it hasn't like brought that upon itself. I just kind of feel bad for it.
People aren't playing it for the it gets them through the door, the story does, but they're not coming back for it.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Coming back for that sweet loot.
Dennis, what does Phil say?
Phil, the combo breaker Holmes, says, I don't actively avoid media, but I don't seek it out either. Mostly I wait until initial impressions get out to see if it's worth buying right away or waiting for a sale.
So something that I'm noticing is just a real reluctance to engage in the marketing. I'll talk about that when I get to mine. But like
I sure, said, yeah. You also call that the No Man's Sky effect.
Yeah. Let's see. Ollie decided to be funny with it. Ollie says, I avoid direct eye contact, kind of coming from the side, hoping my nerves don't show. Try to say something clever and witty to make it laugh and break the ice. Maybe I'll try and impress the game with my knowledge. But usually I try to just be myself, you know? Games like when you're honest.
Except for Dark Soul. Dark Soul will fuck you up.
Yep. No matter where you're at, it's coming for you. David, what does Lindsay say?
Lindsay says, I don't really care anymore what comes out, unless it's different than all the CODs and Assassin's Creeds that come out every year. I normally steer away from most sources, except for the good old-fashioned gaming magazines.
Huh. Hey, Lindsay, can you tell me where those are?
Yeah, are they still around?
I haven't seen paper in so long. I had to cut a map that was had to cut skin off of a guy's back because he had a map tattooed there. There we go. That's the joke. Wow. That's Waterworld.
I appreciate Waterworld references.
No, it's fine. It's good. Ben, what does Mike say?
Mike says, in the past 2 to 3 years, my overall interest in the news cycle of the gaming press has waned. This is partly due to life commitments, work, kids, etc., taking priority, and partly due to bringing a greater sense of balance into my hobbies. I still listen to podcasts, such as Your Fine Network, and other, and enjoy listening to discussion about what's new, what's hot, and what's hot garbage. If something piques my interest, such as titles discussed in the latest, check it out, comrade. I'll wishlist it on Steam or GOG or wherever. Beyond that, however, big game announcements are generally met by me with a shrug. Do you know what the last episode of Check It Out, Comrade was?
The most recent one, in the latest one, so it was West of Loathing. I think that Mike is referring to just in general whatever the most recent episode is at the time.
Gotcha.
Yeah. They did West of Loathing in a game that I cannot remember whose title it was. No, this is good. I follow a similar strategy. Like, I will, I use my wish list with wild abandon, not because I expect people to buy me anything, please don't, but because I like getting sale alerts for stuff later on.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what you're really saying with the wish list, is I like this game enough to be told when it's on sale.
Yes. just keep an eye on this one, you know?
I'm interested enough in this game to buy it when it's really cheap and never play it.
it's the I wish this was on sale list.
Yep. Dennis, what does David say?
David says, depends on the game. If I care about the lore or discovery aspects, I put my head in the sand. Otherwise, I go Scrooge McDuck into those tasty knowledge coins and devour every bit I can get. Finally, someone who's honest about binging on free coverage.
Hey, David, are we watching a different DuckTales? Because I don't think that Scrooge was eating them coins. It was more of like a swimming kind of thing.
You don't know what he was doing underneath the top layer.
Specify one way or the other.
Okay, cool. Well, maybe like I forget a duck to the kind of birds they have. They have to eat rocks so that they can digest stuff in their gullet.
Yeah, that brings to mind, how has there not been a stat that's just kind of in everyone's consciousness? Like, you know, it's like you eat 8 spiders over the course of your life. Like, how much water you actually drink over the course of one trip to the pool? Like, going to the pool is equivalent to drinking a full glass of water just because of randomly accidentally swallowing.
Well, the real one is how much piss do you get in your mouth on a daily basis?
Ah, there you are. That's
depends on what you're into.
I'm not here to kink shame. Come on. We're all just trying to get through the day. let's see here. OMG, a moose says, for a while, I'd follow every piece of media about an upcoming game until the pre-order arrived. However, since those were games that were hyped to heck and back, only about 2% of them ended up being actually good. Nowadays, I just ignore any announcements beyond, this is a game we're doing, it is out on date X. Anything else is just a recipe for disappointment.
Fair enough.
Yeah. Agreed. Man, just that there was a solid like 15 years there where what OMGMU said was just the matter of course, just the way you did it.
Mm-hmm.
David, what does Javier say?
Javier says, I tend to watch all the trailers if really interest, but I don't go out of my way to watch all the gameplay videos, for example. I love the Monster Hunter World announcement trailer, but I don't go out of my way to watch all those videos they do that are 15 to 20 minutes long. It'll take enough hours for me as it is. Or from me as it is, I'm sorry.
Yeah. Every new Monster Hunter game is the one I think, maybe that's where it'll take. And then everybody who plays Monster Hunter is like, oh my gosh, it's going to be so good. You should totally get it. Buy it. Like, no, I'm not. There's no room in my life for that.
Although I have to say for me, like, I've gone away from trailers unless they're live action. Those are my jam, despite those being the least actually helpful trailers.
The least informative ones. Yeah. Ben, what does Graham say?
Graham says, habitually, I look up a few things to get me in the hype, then go on a media blackout so I don't spoil too much. Although I think this method is best, there's always the possibility that in my volunteered ignorance, I miss out on an important detail about the video game I'd rather know, like the existence of a video game mechanic that I would dislike and a lot would ruin the game for me. Thankfully, this has not happened yet.
I do have to say, if I could, kind of as a similar thing, if I could just somehow in all video game media have them tell me when a game is a roguelike, that would save me so much time.
Yep. Just filter the Steam store.
Well, yeah, because it's like, that's like every third indie game. It's like, oh, this sounds like really cool. Oh, it's a roguelike.
Can you do negative filtering, like based on a tag?
No, you can't. It's actually really frustrating because the Steam tags are super, super broadly applied.
Mm.
And so it's virtually impossible to get any value out of actually, adding filters.
It's like, all right, I'm going to click the action adventure tag. Oh, that removed two games from the list.
Well, like it's even things where like I want to say, like, for example, the survival tag includes Far Cry.
Oh, geez.
It's just like they take the absolute broadest interpretation of the tag you possibly can.
Yeah. I mean, many games you're trying to survive, so
yeah.
Sure. Hey,
Graham's comment brings up a point, though. Like, I would be curious to know what mechanic in a video game would ruin it for you, like, if there was something in it, you know? Because I'd be surprised by that. I can't think of one.
No.
Well, to David's point, like, roguelikes, if you don't like that, I could see permadeath doing it. In fact, that
yeah.
Raises a little bit of ire around Hellblade.
Mm-hmm.
What else?
Oh, like free to play stuff. Like
for Ben, it would be mm-hmm. the Treyarch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That might be a good multiplayer sometime.
Oh, what's your deal breaker?
Yep.
Yeah. Dennis, what does Greg say?
Greg says he thinks he's too late. You are not, sir. But total media blackout for me. That applies to movies and books as well.
Yeah.
Short and sweet.
Yeah, and so is Evan, who says, I tell myself I will go on blackout, but I never do. I always cave and go read or watch the first thing one of the critics I follow writes or makes about it. Yeah, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I mean, not having a strong policy is also a policy. Like, doesn't matter what you tell yourself.
Yeah. Our president has taught us that.
Jesus fucking Christ.
Sorry.
No, it's fine. Well, it's not fine.
It's not your fault.
It's anything but fine. But yeah, no, this is, you know, it's something where my relationship to pre-release hype has definitely evolved. I think for the several years that I was working in a game store, that was a different thing, but that might've also been a product of the different time. My susceptibility to hype or stoking a game boner has mostly, fallen with my kind of like jadedness or cynicism about marketing in general, especially game marketing, understanding that, you know, prior to a sale, every single time a game, you know, crosses my field of view and grabs my attention, like, that is an engagement point, and they're trying to, you know, juke everything to make sure that there are as many of those touch points as possible, you know, just a bunch of stuff like that. Like, right now there are games that I know I'm going to want, games that I know that are going to be day one purchases, even if I don't play them right away. But for those, I just look at a list of things that are coming out and I add those to a calendar, you know? So I know right now by looking at my calendar, hey, September 26th, Danganronpa 3 is coming out. Okay, cool. Mm-hmm. I know nothing about Danganronpa 3. I just know I want to get it.
So I feel like there's a lot to be said for differentiating between, like, is this hype that's coming from the industry or that's coming from the fan base? Because I feel like, you know, like with Plunkbat, like, there's, you know, a lot of why I, you know, if I were to start playing it would be because of the, you know, hype and popularity, but that's hype and popularity alone, among people that like the game, not from some marketing department.
It's, you know, I think that indie stuff is different like that, especially something in early access. I think, you know, PlayerUnknown's Battleground is like a, you know, and then like that is this weird rogue wave that came out of nowhere. I think when you look at larger titles, the industry and the fan base become inseparable because the fan base has been weaponized to be part of the apparatus.
Yeah, yeah, and you also get into, like, I was reading an article earlier about, like, apparently, you know, botnets are taking over Twitter to, like, you know, basically, I don't know, AstroTurf or CyberTurf or whatever, you know, things like that. So,
oh, yeah. Things like presidential elections? Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
Yeah. How about you, David? What is your pro strat for this?
It really depends. Like, you know, most of the time, you know, recently it truly has been just like, be excited about it, then forget about it. And, until I, you know, it comes back across my field of view.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, every so often, you know, particularly for like MMO type things, those I tend to kind of, you know, binge follow. So it really just depends.
It kind of evens out.
Yeah. There's also the, for me, a big decision of like, is this a game I want to play or watch a let's play?
Also probably a pretty important distinction.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Ben, you seem pretty level headed about this stuff.
Yeah, I think video games, I'm not really interested in watching a lot of like video reviews of it. Cause I would, you know, if it's a game I'm interested in, I would like to play it myself and experience it for the first time. Cause I think the times that I've seen reviews of games, like day ones that comes out, usually it's very hard for me to make it all the way through. Cause if I start to see someone, I'm like, oh, I would rather see this actually playing the game. So I just pause it and go play it, you know?
Yeah.
But I do like seeing the actual like result of the review or like the overall score and maybe like hear the like non-spoiler review of it. So I definitely like to check that whenever a game comes out and I'm interested in it. There's a few exceptions to that. Like Uncharted, I think I bought pretty blind just because I was pretty happy with Naughty Dog's history. So
yeah.
Yeah, that's usually how I go about it.
Yeah. Dennis, first, what made you think of putting up this question now?
Specifically the XCOM 2 War of the Chosen and the amount of reading I did about that before it came out.
Yeah.
So that was the one that got me to post it, but in general, it's been on my mind for a while. And this seemed in a vein that is relatively well unrelated to recent questions.
Yeah.
I always go back and read like the last four questions before posting a new one and be like, okay, something about unreleased games. Okay. That hasn't been covered in a while. But anyway, yeah, I think it's difficult to do, but if you can draw a distinction between like interviews with or articles by PR reps versus interviews with or in articles by developers, I think there's a huge difference. And the first one is you know, not really super useful because it's a PR rep that's just shilling. But if you can actually find the people who are making the game talking about what they're trying to make, I find that fascinating and really exciting. So I will take all of that I can get. And obviously that the two can get muddled sometimes, as in the case of No Man's Sky.
Yeah.
But yeah, like, so just reading the people who actually are in control of making the game and hearing their thoughts on what they're trying to accomplish is great.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll do all that I can, especially. And then, you know, when it comes to like systems heavy games or kind of more factual stuff, just learning about the kind of systems in the game is very interesting to me as well. So I go pretty all out. I like the distinction, I think it was Javier made, about you know, liking the trailers but not the gameplay videos.
Mm-hmm.
I'd never thought of it in terms of that heuristic, but I totally follow that. Like I don't have 20 minutes to spend on this, but
yeah,
I'll gobble up a couple 2-minute trailers.
Yeah. It's kind of like how I'll be fine watching a teaser trailer for a movie, but an actual trailer gets to be kind of iffy.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, thank you so much, everybody, for writing in. And thank you, Dennis, for putting up this question. If you want to participate in these in the future, go to facebook.com/thelevelpodcast and watch for the prompts to go up on Tuesday afternoons. And we don't stipulate this enough, but that is Eastern time, like, you know, Eastern time in the afternoon. Not, you know, wherever you might be at, unless you're in Eastern time, in which case, cool. And I guess Central time can come along too, if you want. Yeah. It might still be afternoon.
See, I feel like we should just like throw them out and like do like Fiji time or something.
As opposed to like UTC, just going straight military with it.
Yeah, we could do that.
Yeah, that'd be even more confusing, except for all those Brits.
The grind.
Now it is time for the grind, where we talk about the games we have been playing over the past period of time or so. Dennis, you've been away for the longest, so let's go to you first.
Yeah, so the meat and potatoes is XCOM 2 War of the Chosen, but I'll save that for last. The other game that I tried out was Dreadnought, and this is one that Jala has talked about on multiple occasions. So space combat game with gigantic kind of slower moving ships versus the zippy fighter pilot kind of game that you might typically think of when you hear aerial combat. And it was definitely an interesting experience. It reminded me more of a MOBA than of anything else. And I was very surprised by that. There aren't, you know, lanes or minions or any of the traditional MOBA trappings per se. But because everything moved so slow, it was much more about positioning in the environment relative to your enemies and relative to your team. And it wasn't something where if you did it wrong, you could fix it with Twitch reflexes. You kind of had to know where your limits were, what your capabilities are, and kind of set yourself up for success based on those parameters. So that felt very MOBA-like because, in a MOBA, you're not necessarily using those sweet flicks and Twitch reflexes. You're more coordinating with your team. And it felt much more that way in Dreadnought. So that was cool. It's got like a free-to-play aspect to it where you start out with a base set of ships. And then as you earn points for those ships, you can unlock new ones, et cetera, et cetera. But it, at least from what I played, it seems like it puts you into tiers. So there's like rookie tier, veteran tier, and, you know, a tier above that.
I heard the wrong tiers at first when you said that.
Oh. It's a very emotionally affecting game.
It's the free-to-play stuff is so bad, it made me cry.
the ships all have children's voices, and they're in pain. Oh, no, stop.
Why would you think this would make me want to play? But I do.
I have to save those kids.
Yeah. So I think the rookie tier is maxed out pretty quickly, so that you can kind of have your base ships and a couple others that you can unlock fairly easily to play with and still be competitive and not feel like you're just outclassed by people who have more powerful ships. And that's a really elegant way to have the sense of progression and increasing power without making earlier ships irrelevant.
Right.
So I appreciated that and that allowed me to jump online and play competitively from the start, even though I didn't have all the sweet stuff unlocked. And my God, is there a lot of stuff to unlock. The tech tree is gigantic. So there's like four kind of base classes of ships. Each of the ships has a tech tree of its own. There's probably, 20 ships in each rough class, and they are on their own tech tree. And then each tech tree is also unique to a manufacturer. So there's like tech trees and tech trees and tech trees going on. It's mind-boggling. You could be unlocking stuff in this game for a long damn time if you keep on playing. The maps that you play on are nothing special. Like, it all just seemed like a different set of stuff to hide behind.
Right.
So it really – and that emphasized, like I said, that kind of – MOBA feel that, you know, you're really, it's about your positioning relative to the enemy and your teammates, versus anything else. But yeah, it felt good when I was on a roll to just kind of roll up to a situation with this gigantic ship and feel like you were, able to just take a bunch of fire while dishing out punishment yourself. Like, it was kind of a unique feel in video games. So I appreciated that.
Nice. How long does the usual match take?
It's on a timer, so if you don't reach the score limit before, I think, 10 minutes, it will default a win to whoever has more points at the moment. But I never had a match get all the way to 10 minutes.
Man, 10 minutes is such a good length for that kind of thing.
Yeah, it's kind of the sweet spot.
Yeah, into it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, me too. It strikes me, and I haven't been able to get together with friends to play it, but it strikes me as a game that would be drastically different when played with a group of friends than when played with randos.
Yeah.
You actually just coordinated attacks.
Yeah, exactly. Because coordination is such a part of it. Like the main ship that I gravitated to was the Dreadnought, which is like the biggest and heaviest of them all. It's the tank. And it has an ability where you can just warp through space by a fixed distance. So you can kind of literally warp into and out of combats. You can't use it that frequently, but I saw people kind of coordinating that they would either, you know, lure enemies in with weaker ships, and then all of a sudden these dreadnoughts would warp in out of nowhere. Or the other thing that I thought was really cool is you could, as the dreadnought, be in the middle of it, have a bunch of people launch missiles at you, which take a little, because everything is so big and moves so slow or is over such long distances, the missiles actually take a while to actually cross the distance and hit. But they'd have everyone lock on, everyone fire at them, and then they just warp out. Causing everyone's shots to miss. Yeah. So there's some really interesting stuff going on there.
Is the Dreadnought, is that the one that has the nuke?
No, I don't think it has a nuke on it.
There are no nukes in space?
Yeah, I know one of the ships that's like its big thing is it has like a ballistic missile type thing that's, you know, kind of just a, you know, really, really long cooldown, very slow, but, you know, just kills everything within a radius.
There's a couple things that it makes me think of. The like sniper class of ship, you can go into siege mode where your shots slow down but deal like a big area of effect damage. And so that's an interesting trade off to make, like sacrificing bullet speed as a sniper and having to get that much better about leading targets and predicting where they're going to be. But exchange for that huge payoff of increased damage if it does hit in like in a blast radius. So that might be what you're thinking of. I think the destroyer might. No, I don't think it does. That's the only thing I can think of in what I played.
Yeah, looks like destroyer is maybe what I'm thinking of.
Oh well, there you go. Very cool.
Nice. And you're playing this on PS4?
Playing that on PS4. Mm-hmm. Yes. And then what I've been playing on PC is XCOM 2 War of the Chosen. So I'll jump into that.
Yeah.
Any other questions on Dreadnought?
No.
Okay, cool. So I'm going to have to start by saying, if I start tearing up while I talk about this.
Wait, which kind of tear? Like you're going up a tier in XCOM? You're getting better?
Oh, man.
It wasn't that good.
No, literally the other kind of tier. It's because I had a rather traumatic experience today. Milo was being Milo and careening around the house, and we're moving in. So I kind of have my computer just on the floor next to the TV, and he knocked it over. And I didn't think of anything at the time.
Well, was
anything.
He was he okay?
Oh yeah, he was fine.
Okay,
you know, barely noticed that anything had happened.
And that's the problem.
Yes. But then the next time I went to turn it on, the computer seemingly turned on, but did not send anything out to the display.
Oh no.
And I went through every combination of like whatever, you know, monitor cord, HDMI to a TV to a monitor, run it from the graphics card, run it from the motherboard, taking the computer apart, putting it back together. And I can't get it to come back up. So the computer's at Micro Center right now. And it was not on at the time it was knocked over. I'm hoping just like some wire popped off that I don't know enough about computers to actually see is out of place and I'll get it back. But I am officially deeming an XCOM curse on my computer. Because I don't know if you guys remember, but when I got the original XCOM 2 and I had bought this computer.
Oh, right. Like, you thought that your laptop would run it.
Right. And it didn't. So I bought this computer specifically for it. And I don't know how many hours in, but, you know, not too far into the game, the graphics card died.
Right.
I had to replace it. So now I don't know what's died on it. I'm hoping something's just out of place, but I am choosing to believe that XCOM is actually like meta fucking with me.
Right, right. It's supreme Iron Man mode. Did you happen to sign any infernal contracts when you bought this about like, you know, the real version of Iron Man, where if you fuck up, it destroys all your possessions?
I didn't do that, but I have noticed vans outside my house. So oh,
don't worry about that. That's the thing I'm working on.
Yeah. So anyway, that's real life. That sucks. But the War of the Chosen that I did play was phenomenal. It really does feel like a completely new game. The same way that Enemy Within did to Enemy Unknown, where just everything has been revamped and tweaked. Frustrations have been removed, but and the new content is kind of a whole new game unto itself. Fundamentally, what it adds is three factions other than XCOM on Earth that are fighting the alien overlords, and then three special aliens, the Chosen, who are basically on a mission to derail you. And that kind of the focus of the original XCOM 2 was on this Avatar project, and it was always very vague about exactly what the Avatar project was, and that was part of the plot of the game, was figuring out what it was. But the result was it just never felt like a real threat. Like, it was this ooky-booky, you know, something bad that had a meter, but it never really felt that pressing because you never knew what it was until the very end.
It was like a MacGuffin, yeah.
It was, you know, I think they meant it to be this, like, scary unknown thing, but it was just, yeah, it made it meaningless. Whereas now, that's kind of replaced, and the primary threat is these three Chosen all hunting you down in their own way. And that's a lot easier to grok. That's a lot easier to understand. Oh, shit, people are coming to kill me.
Is it, right? Is it three individuals, or is it three kind of like factions of these Chosen?
Yes, it is. It is three individuals.
Holy shit. So it's like having three nemeses.
Exactly. Yeah. A nemesis is a great way to describe it. Yes. And they're incredibly powerful. And in fact, when you fight them, I understand, and again, this is because I did all this reading up on the game. When you fight them, they don't die. And I've only faced one so far, and they definitely just kind of, you get them down to zero health, and instead of dying, they peace out and mock you as they leave. So you're going to have to fight them multiple times. Their camps are in different regions of the globe, and any time that you are operating in that region, there is an increased chance that they, you know, they will come out and attack you during the mission. So they have a chance, if you're kind of on their turf, to just come and disrupt whatever you're trying to do in the middle of a mission that's already hard enough, right?
Right.
So that is incredibly intimidating. The first one that I fought was like a stealthy assassin lady,
mm-hmm.
Who could move, attack, and then move.
Oh, geez.
Which, in XCOM, means that she can run out, and she has invisibility, so she'd run out of nowhere, kill one of my people, or you know, put them down to almost no health, and then just disappear, run away. and it tells you, kind of like the Nemesis system in War of the Chosen, Shadow of Mordor, where everyone has strengths and weaknesses, so it tells you their strengths and weaknesses. I'm not sure if it's randomized, but for this first one, she does not, you know, she doesn't trigger Overwatch shots, so there's no sense in trying to like set traps for her. But she does take increased damage from high ground, and she, you know, takes increased damage from a certain type of class of soldier. And so me, the first time I encounter her, I'm like, okay, sweet, high ground. I was actually up on some high ground, on a subway, like Chicago L train rail above the city, right? So I had everyone up on that, and the streets were below. And I was like, great, I've got the high ground. But what that meant was her move was actually like jumping up onto the train track, kill one of my guys, and then jump off the train track back to where I could see her. And I was so pissed off. Yeah, just like I couldn't handle it. So I wound up fighting through. I'm playing at Iron Man. So, but it created this amazing moment where she was, you know, I was trying to do the right thing. I had this intel on her, and she knew how to work around me working around the intel to still screw me over. It wound up that one of my soldiers was right next to her with one health left. It was a gifted soldier. And that's another thing now, that soldiers basically level up slower or faster based on their combat intelligence. It's rare to have a gifted soldier. They're very powerful. And so this was like someone I wanted to hang on to. One health left right next to her, and instead of just killing him, she blinds him.
So he can't... Jesus.
Yeah. Blinds him for good?
I didn't know at the time. So it turned out not to be permanent, but at the time I was just like, okay, so he now can't see except for directly in front of him. But there was another soldier that was bleeding out. And so I send my gifted soldier to now essentially be a mule to pick up this bleeding out soldier and rush her towards the extraction point. There's all these, another new mechanic is the loss. So instead, XCOM is usually like very intense combats with three or four enemies at a time. The Lost are these zombies that are very easy to kill, but there's like hordes of them on the map. And that's, there's never been anything like that in XCOM before. It's an enemy that legitimately you're probably better off trying to just run from or work your way around than killing all of them. And again, that's never shown up in XCOM before. But anyway, so my gifted fighter is blinded. He's carrying this other person that's bleeding out, trying to get to the extraction point. The bleeding out person died in his arms, one turn before I would have extracted. And that final turn, I couldn't bring myself to dump the soldier on the ground and start firing with my gifted soldier. Like I carried them all the way back to the hovercraft, even though I wasn't going to get anything for it. Like just these amazing diegetic moments. that's what XCOM is all about.
How the quality of the game is also the trauma level that you experience while playing it.
Well, and it means something now because the soldiers, another new mechanic, right? This is so many new systems. It really is a whole new game unto itself. Soldiers can form bonds with each other now. And so the soldier who had carried the wounded one that died actually formed a bond with another soldier that survived that mission. And that's probably the roughest mission I've had to date. And so it makes sense that the soldiers would bond over that. But now if I put them back into combat at the same time, they'll get some additional bonuses that you know, they wouldn't get if they were just out on their own, and can do some kind of like team maneuvers, et cetera. And those bonds can get closer and can make those soldiers more powerful, but it will also be more scarring, both from a kind of plot and mood sense, but also from a mechanical sense, if their partner dies.
So, because what video games need are a simulation of depression.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm down.
Sign me up.
Simulation. Yeah. It's a simulation of desperation.
Right.
More depression. And I think that's my biggest hope for the game is that, especially the first XCOM, you could sink 20 hours into a run and screw yourself over in one match or, you know, one combat. But then have another 10 hours before you petered out and the game officially declared it a loss, right?
Right.
You'd see the writing on the wall and you'd restart before you got to that point. Whereas XCOM 2, I think, made a move towards, you know, we're really going to make it hard for you to survive in the first 3 hours of the game, you know, the first couple of rounds. And then as you start getting your feet under you, you will feel much more in control and much more resilient as you turn the tide. So I think that is, you know, I haven't gotten to see the full arc of this new DLC, but what I've read and what I've experienced so far is that that's very much the direction they're trying to go. That brutal difficulty is still there. I've still lost soldiers. I've still had, I think, on average, about half my squad is gravely wounded by the end of any mission. So I'm recruiting a much wider roster of soldiers than I have before. But that later in the game, there are less opportunities for you to just screw yourself and completely lose a, you know, 20-hour investment. The other thing is that they drop all these new mechanics and systems on you at once, and it is overwhelming. the Nemesis system, the factions that I haven't even talked about, and then the Lost, the zombies, are all given to you in one mission.
Oh my God.
All of those new things show up in a single mission, and it like it's a big story mission, it's a set piece mission. There's a, you know, they're going for impact and they get it, but it also is just like, okay, I need a second to process. probably the worst offense is you get out of that mission and then there's all these people back at the XCOM base who want to talk to you and tell you about the new menus that you have and the new non combat systems that you have to deal with, but they don't tell you where any of it is in the UI. Ugh. It's just the big menu pops up. They're like, okay, you got to do this, this, and this, and make sure you're checking this every month. And then it goes away, and you're like, oh shit, where do I find that again? So there's a little bit of the Rockstar problem popping through. It's just such a complex game that maybe they, I don't know if there's anything they could have done to avoid that a little bit. And I am starting to get my feet under me now, but I will, long story short, I'll be very much missing my PC until it's fixed.
Yeah, I can see that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the other big addition is they now have a daily challenge where you get a, you know, it's a somewhat randomized squad and set of objectives, but everyone gets the same map, same soldiers, etc. And you are scored based on how well you complete that objective. So number of soldiers left alive, number of uninjured soldiers left alive, number of enemies killed, main objective completed. They actually have a timer, so these things are on a half-hour countdown. Mm-hmm. I think it only counts down while you're, while it's your turn.
Right.
It doesn't, you know, count alien time against you. But that is that is fun. I played a couple of those, and it's nice to just, given that I'm doing Iron Man from the start for my campaign stuff, it's nice to have a mode where I can screw up and it's not the end of the world.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's been fun as well.
Nice. Yeah, a daily challenge seems like a really good idea for that game, and specifically for the crowd that would be down for it, in the first place.
Yeah, I was surprised that it wasn't more tied to some sort of persistent reward, because there, there's a daily leaderboard, but I'm not unlocking long-term points towards anything here.
Yeah.
Once that day is over, it's gone forever and I'll never think about it again. Yeah. I would like to see almost, and it's like, maybe I'm just trained on free to play now. I don't know. Maybe this is a bad thing.
To have that fill up like a secondary currency.
Yeah. Or just like, maybe give me, give me a special icon, or I don't know.
Yeah.
There's so much soldier customization you can do. Oh, that's another new system. You've got a photo booth now, and you can take fun pictures. I'll post some of them if I ever get my PC back.
And my favorite feature of that, at least from the previews I've read and stuff, is that then those features it will use to make your faction will put up like in-game propaganda posters in the locations, like the maps and stuff.
I've heard that. I haven't seen it yet. But my gifted soldier was just naturally named Fabio. And so I full-on customized him to be a pretty boy that's just wearing bright pink heart boxers. His gun has hearts on it.
Somebody's always following him around with a fan, making sure his hair is blowing majestically.
The picture, the poster that I did of him is him just looking condescendingly down at the camera with his, beautiful bod on full display. And it says, "Eat your heart out before I rip your heart out."
Yeah. Upload that, please.
I need my computer back and then I will. But yeah. Yeah, that's XCOM 2 War of the Chosen so far. Ben, you should be playing this.
All right. I'll play it in like a year, probably. Hearts. But it sounds good.
Yeah, do that.
Good stuff. Is that all?
That's it. That's the big stuff.
Cool. Let's see. Ben, how about you?
Dude, I have had a light week this week. I've played Rocket League. I've played Magic. I made a tiny game for fun over the 3-day weekend.
Ooh.
It's like just a pipe connecting type game, type puzzle thing. But I have a few finishing things that I'll put on it, but I might send it your guys' way just in case you want to play it. Small puzzle game, whatever.
Yeah. What'd you make it in?
It's in XNA, but it's C-sharp's the language, but XNA is like a game thing that they have, right? Like an environment.
Yeah.
The poor man's Unity, even though you can get a free version of Unity. But
I really feel for you having to use C-sharp, though. I'm sorry.
What? Oh, I don't mind C-sharp, but yeah, I don't know. One day I will learn C++. Anyway, other than that, I played, a few mini-games from the guy who's doing the Half-Life 2 commentary, Radiator Yang. He has three like mini games that you can play online for free. They're all related to, they try and integrate like sexual themes into the mechanics of the games, which is kind of interesting. The one game that some of them are like maybe a more none of them are really terribly serious, but the one that I played was called Stick Shift, where it's a quote unquote, the tagline of it's like a new take on autoerotic. It's like you just play a person who's driving a car and all you do is shift gears, but it's supposed to be like a romantic story. It's really weird, but
playing off of the phallic nature of the shifter.
I don't know. It was interesting. I wanted to play it mostly because I enjoy that guy's videos, so I just wanted to see the types of games that he made.
Yeah, I'll drop a link in the notes to this.
Mm-hmm.
Stick Shift. Like, what was another one that he did?
Let me see if I can look it up. All the games are under what's called Radiator 2, which is like a bundle version of it.
Mm-hmm.
But it has the one is called like Hurt Me Plenty or something like that, and the other one is a one word title, I think. Oh, Succulent is the name of it.
Yeah.
You're just a dude eating a corn dog with a couple of people in the background holding cod pieces. So. The music's really good, though. Yeah. So.
Oh, he's got a
game. I'm just playing it for the music.
Yeah, exactly.
He's got a game called Rinse and Repeat, which is about helping a hunk take a shower.
I haven't played that one yet, but yeah, that's on his YouTube page, I think, as well. So.
Huh. No, he's got a bunch of the stuff on Itch.io. Seems provocative.
He has a very good sense of humor. Like, he's a very funny guy. He has like a really like dry sense of humor. So it's interesting to see the type of games that he makes.
Yeah.
He's usually very, I don't know, maybe like critical of games when he plays them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Nice.
Mm-hmm.
Huh. Is that all?
Yep. That's all I got.
Cool. Been a light week for me as well. Because I've been away, didn't have like a weekend. Haven't had a weekend at home for a while. I took that opportunity to play a little bit of like iOS stuff, but it's a bunch of stuff that we've already talked a lot about. So mm-hmm. I feel reticent to like make a whole big thing about it, but like the iOS version of Darkest Dungeon is certainly a thing.
Mm-hmm. Oh, cool.
Yeah. It sure is the Darkest Dungeon we've talked about a lot.
Is it darker this time?
I mean, you can change the screen brightness if you want. Nothing's stopping you.
Darkest Dungeon.
Yep. Also, I didn't realize there was an iOS or iPad version of Sunless Sea as well.
Oh, cool.
Didn't get too terribly far into that, but I mean,
how is that game?
It's
very good.
Yeah. You know, it's the interface I think is a little bit iffier on the iPad just because there's a lot of information. Well, Darkest Dungeon has a lot of information on it as well, but it seems to be presented in a more sensible way. It's just hard to figure out your way around the screen, especially because so much of the interface on the desktop version is mouse over and tooltips and stuff. You know, so like it feels like they had to work pretty hard to get around that. But like the ship controls work fine on iPad, and you know, reading the stories and making your choice, those all work fine. The game that I play the most of is a game called Pocket Arcade Story. This is a game by Kairosoft. People who've listened for a very long time will recognize them as the developer behind another game that I really love, Game Dev Story. iOS developer, been around for basically forever. They're a Japanese company, but another company translates them. All of their games have this really cute kind of pixel art aesthetic to them, and most of them, at least the ones that I really like, are these little management sims. So like Game Dev Story, you are running a game development studio and deciding which kinds of game you're going to make and hiring people and, you know, managing your projects and stuff like that. It's been a while since I played something of theirs. And so when I saw that they had one of these about running an arcade, I was like, awesome. I'm definitely going to hop on that. it very much is a game, you know, in the same vein as what they've done before, with a couple of different exceptions. So this is unlike game dev story in that you are like trying to place stuff around. They've had like mall simulators or like high school simulators where the proximity of things mattered. Here, like, you get these bonuses by kind of creating these themed areas of putting machines next to each other. So like all your ticket machines in one place will reduce the operating cost and things. So like you have your floor plan and you're trying to, you know, lay stuff around. You have regular customers who come in and you're trying to woo them and also increase their skills, because the more enthusiastic and the more skilled they are, the more money they're going to cough up. It feels a little bit like you've trapped them in your in your palace of delights.
So are you trying to make like a pay-to-play arcade then or something, or you're just trying to extort the most amount of money out of your customers?
Yeah, but you know,
all right. But it's fun.
these games are also unrelentingly positive, so okay. You know, like everything is presented as like, oh my gosh, I love this, I'm here making friends and stuff. It's very it has been good for my mental health to like to delve into this happy, colorful world of people making friends and playing video games. So yeah, you know, you're managing your kind of customer relationships, you're hiring some people, but that doesn't have too much to do with anything. If I have one complaint about this, it's that the management side of it takes a little bit of a backseat to the fighting game side of this, because a way that you either uncover new games or game types or get new regular customers is to participate in these tournaments for a Street Fighter 2 knockoff called Road Fighter 2. That's
subtle,
very subtle. Yeah. That presents itself. It's like this little auto-playing Street Fighter game with cute pixel art chibi versions of, you know, parodies of Street Fighter 2 characters. So you have like your little Ryu, you have your little Guile, your little Chun-Li, and then you also have a bunny. It's like Bun Bun Chan or something like that. Now,
is it an electric bunny?
I don't, maybe. What's an electric bunny?
I don't know. I'm trying to think of was it Blanca knockoff?
Oh yeah.
Yeah. The Energizer bunny is the electric bunny.
Oh yeah, there you go.
There we go. Yeah. It's not the Energizer. He is pink though, so he could be moonlighting. I don't know. So what you're doing is like each of your characters has their like power rating, their game skill, and all of the challengers have their own. They will fight each other on by themselves, but you have these buttons that you can press to like either do an attack at a time when their character otherwise wouldn't. But everything is really pinned to the power rating. Like you're just kind of swaying what's already happening there. And so you're going to be grinding for that power rating quite a bit, which is a bummer because I don't really like, I'm already doing one kind of like semi mundane thing, watching numbers go up. I don't want to like throw a bunch of mixers at this place in order to, you know, get people's skills to rise up. You know, I'm here to make money.
is it a thing? Can you throw mixers at your arcade?
You can. Yeah.
Oh,
you can do like you select a game and then you also.
Wait, you mean like blenders and stuff?
Yeah, you just throw them around, you know. Cut some
mixer juggling contest. Yeah,
that's like a party. So you select a game and you invite some people. It's like like events, or there are even campaigns you can run as well. Like, you know, like seasons are simulated, so you can, you know, during summer it'll give you a prompt and say, hey, do you want to spend this amount of money to throw a barbecue? You know, or winter, do you want to, you know, spend this amount of money through a holiday party or something like that? Just trying to increase the fame and notoriety of your arcade. So, like, I love all the management stuff because that is a comforting little box that I can make decisions into and watch numbers grow. But the fighting game side of it, I can see what they're trying to do with it, trying to bring a little bit more tactile appeal to it. I just wish that it was more of a diversion and not something that felt very much just like absolutely necessary to proceed.
Sure.
Yeah. But yeah, I plugged a shitload of time into this game. So my reservations too dire.
Is it a game that you need to, is there like a minimum amount of time that you need to spend playing to get anything out of it? Or is it easy to kind of open up, play for 5 minutes and be done with?
Oh, open up, play for 5 minutes, be done with. Nice. I play for unhealthy amounts of time because I just, this particular kind of game scratches a particular kind of itch for me. But like you can, you know, let the simulation run for a little while and then put it away without having really lost much of anything.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Does the fighting part of it break tempo with the game? Like, are the two, like, do they not seem thematically similar? Or is it just more of a preference sort of thing that you just don't like that type of game?
It might be a preference thing. I just think it's kind of, like, half-assedly implemented a little bit.
Gotcha.
And, you know, you're right. It does break tempo a little bit. To stop everything, to stop the simulation, to go do this, tournament. You know, again, it's kind of mandatory to proceed. Yeah, so maybe a little bit of both would be the proper answer for that. But yeah, game dev story. That's also a good game, which I may end up firing back up. But Pocket Arcade Story. Any questions about that? Okay. David, how about you?
Sure. So the main thing I've been screwing around with is Fortnite actually had their first big content patch. And they introduced what they're calling the Survive the Storm mode, which is basically you have to go in the game, and it's a horde mode. You have to defend a set of generators for 14 days and night. And nights, or what old timey people might refer to as a fortnight. And it's basically during the day you can wander around and build defenses and harvest resources and stuff like that. And then at night you have to you basically get attacked by waves of enemies, have to fight them off. And so it's kind of a neat mode, but it's a little interesting. So I completed one playthrough, and kind of the first problem is that the playing through an entire 14 nights is about 4 hours of continuous gameplay.
Oh, wow.
With no ability to, pause, and if you start halfway through you receive no rewards. So that just on top of just that being hey, a lot of people aren't going to play that long. That's a long enough that's physically you start having problems.
Right, because there's no natural break point.
Right, yeah, because, basically you have to always be on. And, people weren't made to, stare at a screen that long or sit that long or any of the other things that long.
Well, I just don't think you're dedicated.
Yeah, you're starting to sound like a casual, David.
as you do. The other thing that's a little weird is that there's kind of a cycle where, the first night you, have to place one of the, predefined generators. Second night you place a second one. Third night you upgrade the first one, that sort of thing, which the end result of that is by the 14th night, you are defending generators A through G. And, similarly, you've just been, by this point, your defendable base or whatever takes up a good fifth of the map.
Hmm.
And so the game just a little bit goes off the rails. In our case, we ended up, you know, kind of near the end, well, I'd say like at the halfway point, we started getting to the point where like we were having trouble with, you know, the amount of time we had to build and the amount of resources we have, you know, not, you know, necessarily syncing up with doing a real, you know, well thought out strategy. So we basically just ended up building like layers, like each round, a new layer over top of our base by so that like, I tried to take a screenshot, but I couldn't really do it justice. Like by the end of the match, our base was just this like massive, you know, multiple layer thick, like edifice, you know, almost like a, almost like kind of a giant, like stepped pyramid.
A ziggurat.
Yes, exactly. and so, you know, it's one of those things where like, it was not a good experience, like objectively. At the same time, like, I do kind of appreciate just like how crazy some of this stuff did.
Mm-hmm.
Similarly, like by the end of it, like the amount of enemies just you're fighting just keeps mounting up, and you know when you're in the combat, you know the area where enemies spawn, there's kind of this mist that you know spreads over everything. And, you know, there's a lot of enemies that have, you know, particle effects associated with their attacks. So basically, my character uses a heavy machine gun. And so by the end of it, I was pretty much just like firing, you know, completely indiscriminately into this like oncoming horde of enemies, like trying to make it through the night. So it's, you know, one of those things where like objectively, like, someone maybe needs to, like, on the dev team needs to look at this and be like, maybe we need to, like, rethink some of this.
Crank the particles back a smidge.
Right. Well, and just, like, the also, like, it very much was, like, overall the experience was definitely a what happens when you kind of push the game concept a little bit too far.
Yeah.
You know, it almost came across like a, you know, sometimes like an MMO or something like that will do a challenge mode that's like, you know, what if we just threw like 10 times as much enemies at you? Like, let's see what happens. Except that this is meant to be like a core game mode. But all that said, it was kind of fun to experience that stuff. And you know it's something I think I'm probably going to kind of, you know, it's probably going to be an answer to a multiplayer at some point, you know, something I look fondly upon.
Yeah.
So I do have
one
to
day
say,
we'll all look back at this and laugh.
exactly yeah. I do have to say, like, it still continues to be just like they desperately need to fix their advancement system. Because it's like still like I still don't have any classes that I actually like playing because you know they haven't dropped for me. So like it's I'm really interested to see, like, this is, you know, looking like it very well could be a game that maybe they're just going to run into the ground. Like, it's, I'm really interested to see if it succeeds or not.
Yeah, so this is a game by a huge developer, in a pretty big genre, has some pretty trendy ideas in it. I have not heard about this anywhere else. I've also not seen any coverage of it. I had no idea it was out until you mentioned it on the show, or Dennis mentioned it on the show.
I know Polygon reviewed it and gave it a 55 out of 100. And honestly, like, there's been several reviews, and literally all of them have been, this is a great game that is completely ruined by its free-to-play model.
Oh. Yeah.
And like it's really interesting because like it's this weird thing where that like it is, as much as like I do definitely have some, you know, some enjoyment, you know, some fondness for it, like it's a bad game. Like straight up, like the free to play model is not okay. And it's a weird thing where though, like they could pretty much like flip a switch and fix it. Like, you know, it's probably is a little bit easier, you know, kind of said than done, but like it is something that's very fixable that they just don't seem to. Like, you know, one of the things, kind of examples with this, this isn't directly related, but like with this patch came a whole bunch of like, you know, fixes and balance and stuff like that. And one of them is basically the explosive weaponry. The way they work is, you know, they're very, you know, they tend to be game changers, very effective. They have unlimited ammo, but each shot takes up a huge chunk of the weapon's durability, and weapons can't be repaired in this game.
Yeah.
But the thing is, they could, you know, the random stats they could spawn with could be ones that would dramatically decrease the durability decay, or in some cases, a couple of people were able to get to 100% durability decay reduction. And so basically there were two things in this where basically they removed the ability to have durability decay reduction on explosive weapons, and added before this patch basically your healing traps, you know, kind of healing pads, couldn't get, you know, generate the random bonuses as it went up in rarity. And so they fixed that, and they basically retroactively removed the, you know, the durability stuff from existing, you know, rocket launchers and stuff, but did not retroactively fix the healing pads.
Ugh.
So it's just things like that where, like, they keep doing things that, intentional or not, like, send very bad messages to, you know, to their customers.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Seems real slipshod.
Yeah, so I have no idea where it's going, because, like, it is, you know, like, the actual gameplay is very good if they would just fix the, you know, the progression system.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
Well, who knows? Every game like that has the ability to change and become, you know, the best version of it. Just who knows if it will.
Or just get some whales and screw everyone else.
Yeah. Make your game for five people. Oh man. Is that all?
Yeah, I think that's it.
Cool. Well, that sounds like an episode to me. Do you all want to button it up?
Yes, indeed.
The credit. Thank you so much for tuning in to this episode of The Level. As far as announcements go, I don't think it involves anyone else on the show besides me, but if you are in the Pacific Northwest or can get there, it is time for us to start thinking about the Portland Retro Games Expo. I'm going to be there with Gary at the booth. It is the weekend of the 20th, 21st, and 22nd of October is when that's going to be in Portland, Oregon, at the Oregon Convention Center. We are going to be doing a live show, live watch out for Fireballs, about the WarioWare series of games, and we're going to be playing WarioWare at the booth. It's going to be a fun, good time. Chris is going to be there. Chris is coming out, my brother.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. Yeah, so it'll be a grand old time. We will have more details about like meetups and when our live show is going to happen. But yes, October 20th through the 22nd is when that is going to be. Otherwise, for this show, you know the usual deal with ratings and reviews, patreon.com/duckvtv, and just telling your friends. Am I missing anything, guys?
No, I think you got it.
Okay. Well, I've been Cole Ross at Cole Ross on Twitter.
I've been Dennis Furia at D Furia on Twitter, where I actually did post because I was sharing out that I was streaming XCOM. Hmm.
I am occasionally David Moneysmith at Moneysmith777 on Twitter.
I am Ben Merkel at Merkelby on Twitch. Hmm.
And stick around for some titles. Okay. Who has titles for me?
I have two.
Okay, David.
I have pot jokes, and they call it plunk batting.
Okay. Dennis?
I've got Destinies. Okay. And then my far and away my favorite, Three Johns and a Juan.
I kind of like that.
Okay. Ben?
I got Potskins. I also have They Call It Plunk Batting. I have I Wish This Was On Sale List. I have Tearing Up. And I have Nemese.
Wait. I Wish This Was On Sale List.
Mm-hmm.
Let me... what else did you have? I'm sorry. I lost it.
Tearing Up. You'll have to decide how to spell it.
Okay. All right, and then the final one?
Nemese, the plural of nemesis.
Okay. and then I have Nicolas Cage Technology and Multijohn.
Multijohn.
Multijohn's pretty good. Yeah.
See, I still like Three Johns and Juan as as the whatever of that, but...
I think a while back I made a I made a snap judgment that we don't want to put listener names in titles.
Ooh. Fair enough.
Yeah, which is I know we broke that with Ollie a little while back, but I don't want to make it a weird precedent. It can be a fun joke in there. I like They Call It Plunk Batting. Quite a bit.
I do kind of like Nicolas Cage Technology just because of the image that...
Damn, David, we don't do names in our titles.
Listener names. Unless
Nicolas Cage is a listener,
Oh, okay. Right.
Can't put him in.
Not gonna lie, if he was, that would make my entire day.
Just one day, though, that's it.
Just one day.
If you're famous and you listen, just email in and let us know. Nick. Mm-hmm. We can call you Nick, right? Yeah. Cool. All right. Well, I'm going to go because I have to edit this and also an abject suffering to go out tomorrow.
Get it.
Have a good night, everybody. Good luck with your computer, Dennis.
Yeah. Fingers crossed. I should get a call tomorrow night with details. So I'll let you know.
Yeah. All right. Well, take care, everybody.
See you guys.
Bye.
Mm-hmm. Bye. See ya.
Peace. Bye.